Hello, this is Susan Sandiford. We're pleased to be speaking with Neil Slade this evening. He's a musical composer, seasoned concert performer, author, artist, and brain aficionado. Master Neil, as I like to call him, teaches people how to easily tap into higher brain functioning for high increases in creativity, intelligence, pleasure, as well as numerous paranormal abilities. Neil previously worked with TDA Lingo at the Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory in Colorado for 11 years. He is well known, for his brain music, which has appeared nationally and on PBS television. Neil has also written The Frontal Lobe Supercharged, produced the Whole Universe Brain DVD, and you can find all of his works as well as his dimensional traveling music on his website, neilslade.com. I recently read Neil's latest released book called The Book of Wands. It's very rare that I buy books these days, but after hearing Neil's radio interview on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie in January called Traveling with Wands, I intuitively knew that I had, with a capital H, to have this book. It was as if this book was calling to me. With the first two sentences, which read, "I am the Book of Wands. Nice to meet you," I was sucked into another world, mesmerized with the stories that began to unfold. What I surprisingly found was that the Book of Wands has its own consciousness that interacts with the reader. When I finished the book, all 738 pages, I wanted more. So I clicked my amygdalas forward and heard Interview Neil. So here we are. So welcome, Neil. I'm delighted to converse with you this evening about your amazing work.
Yes, well, thank you very much. I had to laugh when you said Master Neil.
Well, it just seemed appropriate.
I always deny being the master of anything, so except of my own creative zaniness.
Well, I think it's worth the term master, even creative zaniness.
All right.
Yeah. So is there anything I missed in that intro that you would like to add?
No, that's a not very complimentary and nice summary, so that's fine. I have to tell you right off the bat that I had a very interesting, I don't know how to describe it, multidimensional experience just yesterday on two separate occasions. One was walking my faithful companions, Urfi and Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was right here in my living room, which has been the site of some very bizarre ongoings from time to time, one of which you read about in the book, which was my flying broom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I do have a flying broom, as strange as it seems, and I'm holding it right now. This broom has flown off my wall on three separate occasions, all by itself, and we don't have earthquakes here, and the building's not settling, and it was one of the strangest things that has happened around here, although I certainly have no shortage of strange things.
Hmm.
One thing, as I was taking the dogs for walks, and the reason I bring this up is because the book really talks about travel between different realities and different universes and how that is an actuality, not just a figment of my imagination.
Correct.
Often when you move from one reality to another, you hear a sound. In the Book of Wands, I describe somewhat humorously the sound as Pong.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see if I've got my little Pong. Yeah, here it is. Here's a musical instrument that I have that kind of replicates that sound, although there is no real replication of that sound. This is kind of a Pong sound right here. So that's my little Pong sound maker.
Very good.
But I'm walking the dogs.
Okay.
I do that. We probably walk 2-3 miles a day. I've got a couple little Westies. One of the reasons I walk the dogs is to really put myself in a completely different space than I find myself in other environments. And walks are a good way to connect to what I call the big earthly neural network.
Okay.
Which is a manner in which information travels through the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And by going on walks and using one of my canes or umbrellas, I can, anyone for that matter, can connect to information and intelligences that they might and they probably wouldn't otherwise. So I'm on the walk, and as if a UFO had just come in and out of the sky, I hear this sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll try to duplicate it just with my mouth. It went, phew!
Cool.
Like okay. That. And that's actually pretty close. That's pretty close to what I heard.
Okay.
It wasn't fast enough to be a bullet.
Right.
It certainly wasn't a bird or an insect or any kind of flying animal. I have no idea what this was, but it was distinctly sounded as if something had passed through my reality for a moment, as if it were moving, whatever this object or thing or consciousness was, it just quickly passed within feet of my head.
Hmm.
And that's why I say it was, I mean, the first thing that struck me was that a UFO had just gone by.
Okay.
I have never heard anything like this in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had a bullet whiz past my head before.
Hmm.
So I know what that sounds like.
Okay.
This was not that. It was something indescribable.
Did it
the other
stop
thing
you
that
in your tracks?
What?
Did it stop you in your tracks?
Oh, absolutely. It was like, oh my God, what was the, my jaw just fell to the ground.
Yeah.
It was that strange.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that would happen was, it's more of a more humorous note, but still inexplicable. And people will certainly jump to the, or will be prone to jump to the to another conclusion than the one that I come to. I was taking apart a little piece of musical gear, a guitar effects pedal.
Okay.
And I dropped one of the screws onto my wooden floor. Now, let me describe to you the room in which I was working. The room is predominantly empty. It has a hardwood wooden floor.
Mm-hmm.
I have guitars that are hung up around the perimeter of the wall. And there's a harpsichord with three legs standing in the middle of the floor. And there's a wooden chair. And there's another wooden chair. And there's a little four-legged pump organ. And that's it.
Okay.
So I dropped the screw on the floor, and I had a friend with me, and we both heard it hit the floor. And typically, if you've ever dropped a screw on the floor, you hear ding, and then you hear it roll a little bit, right?
Right, correct.
Well, this screw hit the floor, and it was as if it fell into a black hole. We heard clink, and it was gone. We spent an hour looking for this screw. And there's not too many places to look in this room.
Okay.
We have no idea where this screw went. It is this, is, I have no explanation except it went to the screw hall from another dimension.
Okay.
There is no place for this screw to, and we looked for an hour. We looked in our pants cuffs. It was just very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, and people think, well, you just missed it. It just rolled into the other room. We looked in the other room. We looked everywhere. We even looked up, like, you know, as if it could have bounced up onto a table.
Okay.
Or into the harpsichord, which it most certainly, we looked inside the harpsichord. We looked. This screw vaporized. Now, the reason why I bring up these two incidences is because when the Book of Wands talks about alternative and parallel realities and how common they are, and when you begin to shift your thinking into a manner that includes You know, everyone is familiar with the concept of parallel universes, and parallel universes actually
right.
is an oxymoron, but parallel realities and alternative universes. People know that from quantum physics and from science, and you know, people typically think that's very theoretical. Well, I'm here to say, and I'm certainly not the only one to say this, but these aren't just theoretical things. This is something that you and your friends mm-hmm. will experience as a concrete realities once you sort of retune your brain just slightly. Mm-hmm. If you begin to think that, okay, there are parallel realities, and I can slip from one, and I can travel from my current reality to another parallel reality, and it is a real thing, filled with real people and real objects, and in fact, it may look exactly like the reality that you're in, except for a couple of little differences, a couple of very startling differences. And I'll give you one very, very simple example.
Okay.
Most people live in a reality where they go to work and they hate their job. Unfortunately, that is the case. Okay? A parallel reality would be one that everything is very similar to the reality that you live in right now, except you love your job. Okay? Very simple yet very, very important distinction between two realities. And in fact, there are many people who live lives in which they actually enjoy their work. Now, I ask your listeners, how would you like to move into that reality? Okay? Where many of the things that you love, if not all of the things that you love, are exactly the same, except that your employment is such that you love what you do. When you get up, you can't wait to go to work. That is the type of travel that I'm speaking of. Now, there are other types of travel in which the reality is extremely different from the reality, your daily experience that you experience. And it is possible to travel once you understand what wands are and what you understand what this whole idea of parallel universes and parallel realities means. It is possible to travel to those types of realities, and people tend to emphasize, well, yes, I'm going to travel to another dimension in which, you know, the wildest thing you can think of. The thing is, if you were to go to those types of dimensions, you probably wouldn't be very comfortable there, and you probably couldn't wait until you got back to your nice warm bed at home. So I don't tend to emphasize movement into those types of, you know, very psychedelic realities. You know, the shamans who use medicinal plants can very easily travel to those types of realities, but you don't stay there very long because that's not what our life on this planet is about. You're really close to being where you need to be, and all people really need to do is just, you know, kind of shift over. Rather than jumping from universe A to universe Z, you're going to be a lot happier just going to B or to C or to D, at which point that becomes your reality A. And then the next universe over becomes B and C and so on.
Would you say that dreams are often traveling into other realities, dimensional realities?
Oh, yes. Absolutely, but it's more dreams are typically, I mean, dreams really are looking into a window.
Okay.
Okay. Now it's important when you talk about when you start to understand this concept of real alternative realities,
mm-hmm.
what I'm talking about is a reality that is every bit as concrete and physical and real as the one that one is residing in at any given moment.
Okay.
So you're not going, you know, and when we dream, we always wake up the next morning.
Right.
And we're back to our, you know, the reality, and we're back to our universe. And I spell that Y-O-U-universe.
Right.
Universe. Because everyone lives in their own universe. And in fact, that's a good example of parallel universes right there. You can have two people listen to the same piece of music or watch the same movie and get completely different things from that information. So reality for one person is, you know, even though two people may be sitting next to each other on the couch listening to the same piece of music, experiencing what they perceive as the same thing, nothing is the same for any two people.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a universe that is very personal and specific to that brain.
Mm.
And there's a very old saying, I think it's an old Jewish saying, that if you save one person, you save the entire universe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Well, that itself implies that for every person, there is a whole universe.
Mm.
And I'm in total agreement with that.
Yeah.
And we live in a world in which all of these universes are interlocking and overlapping, but yet they're different.
Mm.
They are fundamentally different to a extent. Unless I'm the only person in the entire universe and that everyone else is just a figment of my imagination. So, you know, pick one of those. If
right.
that's the case, then I'm just talking to myself here. But if that's not the case, your universe is parallel to a certain degree to my universe.
Right.
Or parallel to my reality, rather. And so the Book of Wands is really about how one move from the universe that they are in to the universe that they want to be in.
Mm. Got it. Got
okay?
It. Yes.
And why it's the Book of Wands is because the Book of Wands is the story of the use of tools, physical tools that one uses to move from one reality to the next, in the same way that, you know, you get into your automobile and you travel to the supermarket universe, let's say, okay? Or not really, but you move from point A to point B in your car, okay? The car is a tool for movement, for travel. Now, wands are unusual tools that are used to facilitate movement from one universe to the next.
Okay.
And so that's why it's the Book of Wands.
Perfect. Yeah, that's really interesting. I know that 2 weeks ago, I heard my very first pong, but it was when I was coming awake, so I didn't remember if I was traveling anywhere or not.
As you're in bed.
As I'm in bed.
And you're moving from your dream state to your waking state.
Correct.
And you heard a sound.
Yes.
And that's very that's actually very common, yes.
And actually, it was the first time I've ever heard it.
Well, probably because your attention is now focused on that.
Oh, sure. And my first thought was, well, why are the church bells ringing? But then it turned into that gongy, Chinese gongy sound.
Yeah.
And I thought, I just heard my first pong.
Uh-huh.
But later on that evening, as I, you know, and that night I went back to sleep and I woke up and I'm in my room, in my bed, and I'm looking over at the corner of my room at a closet with the door standing open and not realizing that closet isn't there in real life. And I'm wondering why it's standing open, and I'm seeing my cat standing there looking into the closet that's not supposed to be there, looking at something, and I'm going, oh, my God, did somebody come in the house and open that closet door? And then, boom, I woke up and I was back into my universe here where there is no closet in that corner. And, of course, my cat's sitting there, but the closet's gone.
Yes.
So I don't know if that was a dimensional travel, but it sure felt like one.
Well, you know, I feel that there are, and when we were, when I was speaking of realities, parallel realities before, there is this dream time reality. And if you mm-hmm. talk to the Aborigines of Australia, they will tell you that that is the real reality and that this is the dream time. People typically have it backwards.
Backwards, yes.
That this is the dream, and the experience that you have at night when you are asleep, that's the real
the real
thing.
World. Yes.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways to look at it. But I think we are really to be most concerned. I mean, you can take that viewpoint that that's where your attention needs to be, and this is what the Aborigines, this is what they focus on.
But you're
in
really
Western
talking
culture,
about something different.
Excuse me?
But you're talking about something different.
Yeah, I'm talking about, yes, something different from that. And that is what we typically refer to as our waking, as real life.
Right.
Okay. Now, most people make the incorrect assumption that there's only, that's one universe. Right?
Okay.
The universe for you in southern Colorado and the universe for me here in Denver and the universe for somebody living in Manhattan, that's all one reality in one universe, and that's all there is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to say, no, that's not all there is.
Mm-hmm.
That there are reality is more like a automatic record changer,
mm-hmm.
in which you have a stack of records on a spindle.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those records have been played and they're on the turntable rotating. And above that on the spindle is a whole other stack of records.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all turning and they're all moving, right?
Right.
Now, you can pick up the needle and you can place it on any one of those layers of records. You can flip through all the records and let the platters come down and play the last one, or you can move them up and play them on the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can put that needle at any point on any of those records. And in fact, you could take your hand and you could make those records spin backwards and hear the music backwards. And that's what the universe really is. It's an infinite number of records. And they're all right next to each other. And as a traveler, okay, a traveler is a person that is able to move from one record to the next and play the record at any point. You can do that with a record. Why can't you do that with your life? And I am suggesting that there is nothing to prevent you from picking up that needle and experiencing this experience at one point, and then picking up the needle and putting it on this experience over here and picking up the needle. And to whatever extent that you can imagine, you can do that and make that experience exactly as real and as concrete and as intense as the experience that you are having right now listening to this interview.
Okay. So that kind of gave me...
That's what traveling is all about.
Yeah, and that kind of gave me an aha moment, you explaining it in that way, in the fact that when I started my journey, let's say it was in 93, I was living a particular life where I was miserable, I was not happy, I didn't think anything was going my way, and I sat down on the couch and I said, I must be doing something wrong, I'm throwing everything I believe out the window, there's got to be a greater truth out there. And then after that point, metaphysical experiences started happening in my life that changed my whole outview and moved me to now I'm in a totally different universe had if I stayed in that miserable place that I was and just accepted that as my lot in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so would that be the idea of my decision to tap into something greater, which moved me into another universe? Would that be a similar way of saying you don't have to stay in an unhappy job?
Yes. Now, right. And I use that example just because it's a kind of easy example.
Because I think
many people have had experiences similar to that. Mm-hmm. In other words, they may be in a relationship.
Correct.
That's one universe.
Right.
Y-O-U universe, okay? And then they extricate themselves, or for whatever reason, that relationship ends, and they come into another relationship. Well, that's another reality with very, you know, that's very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's looking at the existence of parallel realities on a very rudimentary,
mm-hmm.
you know, very basic level. But I use that illustration with a little bit of caution because I think it can be a mistake to say, well, I prefer to very easily jump to a conclusion that you prefer one reality to another. Often, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there's the saying that be careful what you wish for. You may
exactly.
get it.
Yes, yes. Yes.
So a traveler... Okay, a master, as it were, of traveling, of consciously moving from one reality to another, is very cognizant of the trappings of moving too quickly, of preferring what may superficially look like a preferred universe mm-hmm. over another. And traveling is something that is not something that you take lightly.
Exactly.
It's traveling is not like going to the amusement park and getting on a roller coaster and let's go on another ride. Okay, let's go over to this ride over here. Traveling is a much more difficult and much more serious business than that. And it, in fact, it can and is often a life and death type of a journey that mm-hmm. one makes. And it's not anywhere nearly as easy as people may assume. Right. Now, since I wrote the Book of Wands, I've gotten a great many emails from people saying, oh, okay, well, can I use this as a wand? And you know, I got an email yesterday. I lost something in my house, like my keys or something, someone said. How can I use my an umbrella to find my keys?
Hmm.
Okay. Now, that may be possible, but right off the bat, I explained that using a wand is no easier than learning to become a virtuoso piano player.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this person, they just read the Book of Wands, and already they're saying, okay, how do I use an umbrella? They've missed a lot right off the bat. I could tell from their email. They missed a lot of very rudimentary ideas that I'm very specific about in the book. One is, okay, if you are able to identify an unusual tool that you can apply for traveling, you're not going to be able to pick up, you know, I could give you one of my tools, okay, whether it be my saxophone or a sword or one of my good umbrellas, or one of my flying brooms, for example. I say one of my, I have one broom that flies, or my broom. And I'm going to be able to give it to you. People assume that if they say the, you know, and this is part of the mythology of wands, that if you just say the right magic words, hocus pocus, presto chango, you're going to be able to use that tool in a way that will result in miraculous changes. Hmm. And that's not the case at all. That would be the same as me handing my saxophone to someone who's never played a saxophone before and say, okay, play the Hindemith saxophone concerto. Here you go. Go. You know.
Right. Yeah.
So when I get these emails, well, how do I use an umbrella to, you know, to win the lotto? It's like I go, well, I don't know. I sure would like to know myself, you know.
Sure.
I don't use it in that way. If I could tell you how to do that, I would. But
yes.
The couple of things. Number one, okay, traveling means going to a new place.
Okay.
It means exploration.
Okay.
That's part of my definition and of traveling. Now,
and you
may
can
have
say
a
physically too.
Yes.
Right.
You may have a different, you know, traveling and wand use. There's many things that are happening. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number one, traveling means exploring. It means going someplace that you've never been before, someplace new. That's part of my definition of what traveling means.
Okay.
Traveling, and think about the word travel. It means to move from one point to another point, okay? It means moving to a new location, a location that you're not in.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
To this I add, the idea that you are, as a traveler, you are an explorer. You are going to some place that you've never been before. And I think that's a very important concept, you know, to keep in mind.
Right, yeah.
The other thing that is very important is when you use a instrument, a tool to do this, that it is something that is very personal to you. I'm trying to think of a metaphor that I can use. Perhaps a metaphor such as when you get into a car and you go someplace, that doesn't work. I'm trying to think of something. All I can summarize by saying that to go to someplace different and new, to be an explorer, requires that you have a very personal relationship with your instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not necessarily in the instrument itself, but in how you relate to that instrument. Okay, here's a good example.
Okay.
Jimi Hendrix played a Fender Stratocaster guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In his hands, that instrument could sound like no other guitar. Jimi Hendrix's Stratocaster guitar in his hands would allow him to do things and create sounds and soundscapes and oral landscapes that were very unique to him. Now, you could take that exact same instrument and give it to me, and I guarantee you I'm not going to sound like Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could give that guitar to anyone else, and there, you know, they are only going to be able to perhaps, you know, copy to a certain extent Jimi Hendrix, but they're never going to sound like Jimi Hendrix.
Mm.
He had a relationship with his guitars that was very unique. And as it turns out, he would play a Fender Stratocaster upside down with the strings backwards. So he had a very unusual way of approaching that instrument. And when one begins to think about traveling and using wands and unusual tools, you approach your tool in a very personal way that is specific. Oops, I just stepped on my dog's squeaky toy. That's what that was. No, I didn't step on my dog. I stepped on his toy.
Oh, okay.
So I just heard a funny noise. So that the way in that you use your tool is very personal and very specific to you. And there is no way that you – it's not like you just grab a screwdriver, right?
Mm-hmm. It,
you know, I can give you a screwdriver and you can drive screws into the wall in exactly the same manner as I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it works to, you know, in that way.
Right.
Screwdrivers can, you know – That's how they work. They do a very simple job, and I can give you that screwdriver, and you can use it to drive in screws and do that as effectively as I do. But a wand is different in that if I have a wand, an unusual tool that facilitates travel, mm-hmm. and I use it to travel from point A to B, that's a way that I relate and have a relationship with that particular tool. It
mm-hmm.
does something for me that it cannot do for you.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit, yeah, I'm trying to clarify what I mean here, but in a way I can only, you know, approximate, I can only hint at these things.
Right.
In the way that I'm trying to explain.
Right, yes, yeah.
But basically, a person has to figure out through their own exploration
mm.
how to use their wand. There is no generic wand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Harry Potter, if you drop your wand, any older wizard can pick it up and go
right.
hocus pocus and do it. But that's a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fictional story.
Right.
I'm talking about something real.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that I'm describing this, that doesn't work.
Right. Right.
A wand is something that is that you have a specific way of using that has specific results for you. That cannot, nor would you want to duplicate them
right.
with anyone else. And
right.
perhaps you can think of if you understand what I'm talking about, perhaps you can come up with a better, you know, metaphor for that type of thing.
Well, no, I think you explained that perfectly. And my question then is, as I was reading the Book of Wands, and I had shared this with you in an email, I had read 6 chapters into the book and went to sleep that night and woke up with the consciousness of the Book of Wands talking to me and showing me something. And I've got this big smile on my face because it feels very Merlin-esque. And that was my first clue that there's something going on in the consciousness realm with wands, with the Book of Wands, that really made me want to explore. And this consciousness has shown up a couple of times in my life, showing me a couple of things. And so I figured the last thing it showed me, I was supposed to figure out what I was supposed to do with it. So I'm in the process of creating this.
Mm-hmm.
And I see what you're saying is that this consciousness has given me a tool that I need to explore with. And so it's almost like until I get that done, then I'll be shown the next thing, of where I need to go in working with this consciousness. So is that fair to say that there is a consciousness literally of the Book of Wands that begins working with you once the student is ready?
Yes, right. And that's always been my experience, you know, talking about this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you've put that pretty well.
Okay. Well, good. So I'm exploring my wand, you know, and using my intuition to say, okay, now I've got what I'm supposed to do. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it yet, but I'll wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
And that.
Well, first of all, I think we probably, for your listeners, because there are going to be some people who are hearing this cold and they're not, they're probably trying to figure out, well, what exactly is a wand?
Oh, what is it? Yes.
What is it? So maybe we should talk a little before we go into the details. You know, what is a wand? What is a wand and what is not a wand?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Well,
I have it on my list.
A wand, first of all, and I've mentioned this, a wand is a tool that facilitates movement from one reality to another. Now, before I even get into the details of what a wand may or may not look like, the first question that comes to mind is, well, why do I need a tool? Can't I just do that with my own mind?
Mm.
So the answer to that question is yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is humans are tool users.
Mm.
If you weren't a tool user, you would be sitting in a cave in India somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't have any clothes on, and that would be it. You'd just be sitting, right?
Right, right.
But we are tool users, and there are other animals that are tool users, but humans are really tool users. We like to have objects. Now, as a rule, we use tools with our hands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? For the most part, tools are objects that we manipulate our universe and our place in the universe, and we use our hands with our opposable thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So let's add that definition. And a wand is a tool that we use holding in our hand. And typically, with an extended arm. It's not something that we hold close to our chest. It's something along the lines of a fishing pole. And for me, that's a very good description.
Mm-hmm.
When you travel, you move from point A to point B, or you move something from point B to you at point A. Traveling means moving yourself or traveling objects.
Mm-hmm.
And that fits in mostly with the kind of archetypical vision that people have with wands. You wave a wand, hocus pocus, and something appears out of nowhere.
Right.
Right? Or you change a dog into a cat. You wave it, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So traveling means to either move yourself from one universe to another, or move an object from one reality into your reality. Okay, so traveling has a little more broad description than typically one would give to the archetypical use of wands. And let me see if I can keep from losing my train of thought here.
Well, we were going to talk about what can be wands.
Oh, right. Okay. So a wand is something that is a tool that you, and all tools, most tools you hold in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when we think of wand, we typically think of something that is when we talk about traveling, we're talking about moving something from one point to another point, okay?
Okay.
And the shortest distance between two points is typically a straight line, although not always.
Mm-hmm.
So our wand is like a fishing pole in a sense, okay? It is the thing that's between us and that other thing,
right,
or that thing that that moves us from point A to point B. And it is typically a long, straight object, okay? But that ain't, that's a lot of things, okay? That could be a pen,
okay,
or a pencil, or a paintbrush, or a fishing pole. It might be a ruler, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the rudimentary types of things that we think. It might be a sword. It might be an umbrella. But, oh, hold on a second. An umbrella has a curved handle. Okay, so a wand typically is a very simple object that is something that you hold in your hand, and it is more or less straight. But as I had more and more experiences and a greater understanding of what a wand is, I suddenly had to include objects that were not straight.
Hmm.
And I came to realize that my saxophone was a wand,
hmm,
that my guitar could be a wand, and experiences with my students then led me to understand that it was even greater than that. A keyboard could be a wand. A camera could be a wand. These were all tools that I came to realize could be utilized as objects that would allow me to travel from one universe to another.
Mm.
And your listeners may ask themselves, well, okay, a broom is a wand, but is my goldfish a wand?
Mm.
Well, defined wand, defined traveling. If your goldfish is a tool that will allow you to move from one reality to another, well, then it would have to be a wand. Now, in my experience, my personal experience, and again, this is all very personal. In my experience, and I've had lots of goldfish, I've never been able to use any of my goldfish as wands.
Okay.
So for me, goldfish are out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Lawnmower, not a wand for me.
Okay.
My own definition is that a wand is an object that can easily be carried with you.
Mm-hmm.
It could maybe fit in your pocket or in your backpack. You know, so you may ask yourself the question, I sound like David Byrne here. You may ask yourself, is my lawnmower a wand? Well, for me, a lawnmower has never been a wand.
Mm-hmm.
For you, I don't know. I would guess that for most people, a lawnmower would not be a wand.
Okay.
But for a lot of people, a clarinet could very well be a very powerful wand.
Right.
All I can do for anyone, really, when we're talking about this, is tell you what, you know, hey, this is my universe. This
right.
is the universe of Neil Slade. And in the book, you know, Neil Slade's Niles Abercrombie,
right.
which is my semi-autobiographical fictional character in the book, I can say, you know, in that universe, these are the rules. But I would be the last person to ever say that this is the way it is for everybody, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just telling you what it looks like from the center of Neil Slade's universe. Take what you can use and use it, and if you can't use it, ditch it.
Right, right.
So that's kind of a given here, you know.
Right.
So if someone comes along and says, well, you know, Neil Slade is, you know, he's giving these very arbitrary definitions and, you know, that's not the way I see it. You know, to that I would say, great. You know, you're dealing with your universe and, you know, you're actually going along with my definition. which is that a wand is a very personal tool that you have to develop a relationship with yourself, and what works for you will not work for me, and vice versa, and so on and so forth.
Would it be fair if, well, let's say, have you put out to this universal, this consciousness, to lead you to a wand that would work for you? Have you ever done it that way, or have they just come
and you
just intuitively know that's my wand?
Could you ask that question one more time? Because I'm not sure that I got it.
Okay. Putting out the thought to the Book of Wands lead me to a tool that works for me, and then see how the universe leads you to that. Have you ever worked with the Book of Wands in that way?
Oh, okay, okay. I didn't quite understand. You're speaking in terms of the consciousness of the
book. Correct.
Okay.
Consciousness.
And I think we need to kind of reiterate again that the Book of Wands claims to be, or I claim it to be, it's a consciousness, a personality.
Right, and that's what I've experienced it as.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So the question then is, if you establish a communication with this entity, as it were, and I think I need to clarify that even. Let me say what is said in the book.
Okay.
And that the Book of Wands, you know, when I talk about the Book of Wands, people, unless they've read the book, think, okay, this is a book about wands.
Right.
Which it is, right? But it's not just that. The Book of Wands is really the thought behind the book.
Exactly.
Right? I printed up, you know, 1,000 copies of this book, say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If we were to gather up all of these books and make a giant bonfire and burn all the books,
right,
would there still be a Book of Wands?
Yes.
Of course there would be.
Yes.
That goes without saying.
Right.
Okay? So the next question is, where is that book? It must be in Neil Slade's head. But no, you read the Book of Wands. So it's in your head.
Right.
So where is the Book of Wands? Is it in your head, right? Or is it in my head? Or is it in both our heads? Or what happens if, you and I, are vaporized, in a nuclear holocaust?
Heaven forbid.
That gross, right? Does the Book of Wands then disappear?
No.
Does it no longer exist?
Right.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, I say yes.
Oh, you say yes.
Because I have to then, because the next question is, where did I get the idea for, where did I get the Book of Wands?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right? Did I just, did I just make the whole thing up? Did I just, synthesize this idea with this idea and put it together, and oh, okay, now here's the Book of Wands. Mm-hmm. And to that I say, no.
No, right.
There is this, the Book of Wands is an idea, it's a thing, it's a personality that exists independent of me or anyone else, for that matter.
Yes, human
thought. That a thought exists independent of any one individual.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And at this, in this particular universe, at this particular point in history, well, I was one guy who typed it out.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Or I brought it down from the mountain, in which I retrieved it from somebody else who typed it out.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but where did that person get it from? And it's the same kind of thing. So
it's like looking into a mirror with mirrors behind you, and all you see are thousands of mirrors going along, and it still exists.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and the question comes up in the book, and I've asked the same question in my other book. Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, people, Neil Slade is 5'7", and he's losing his hair, and he plays the guitar, and he lives in Denver, Colorado. Oh, no, let's get rid of all that stuff, okay? Yeah, Neil, that's kind of what Neil does,
mm-hmm.
But who is Neil? Well, Neil is the brain, right, in which he sees all of this stuff that's happening from his location. From his
consciousness.
He's looking out these two eyeballs.
Right, right.
He's got two arms and two legs, and he lives in Denver, Colorado, and he plays guitar. Right, but Neil is really the guy who's looking out from inside this brain. And then I ask the question, so the brain, Neil's brain, experiences and sees all this stuff, but yet, who is the guy who's looking through the brain?
Hmm.
Right? Who's recognizing the sensory data that's being computed inside this brain? You know, Neil's brain right now is walking in back and forth in his basement and holding a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So Neil's brain is having the experiences, but who is reflecting upon those experiences?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, oh, there's somebody else behind all of the, it's the I.
Right.
Right? This kind of I, this...
The I am.
Egoless thing, right?
Right.
You know, I've got a big ego, but yet there is this other kind of person. It's as if the brain is a TV set, okay?
Okay.
And all this stuff is, and all these programs are playing on the TV set, right?
Right.
But, who's watching the TV?
Right.
Okay? Where did I get into this?
Well, I don't know, but I totally understand, that
I lost
we were talking about
I lost
consciousness.
Back of the original question.
We were originally talking about the consciousness of the Book of
Wands. The Book of Wands, right. Okay, yes. Okay, I understand that. Okay.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about the Book of Wands as being this consciousness, we're talking about this pure thought, pure original idea, and that's what the Book of Wands is telling us it is,
mm-hmm.
that it is this thing that's, at another level than this very crude, definition that we typically, give to personalities.
Right.
Your statement was, when you were talking to the Book of Wands.
Correct.
As it were, when you were talking to this idea,
mm-hmm.
that is behind the idea of using tools to travel from one universe to another.
Right.
Maybe your question was this a legitimate, process.
Personality. Yes, 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 yeah.
And sure, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And a fun consciousness, may I say, because I'm just smiling ear to ear whenever, and I've run into or I've had encounters with it, I don't know what to call it, twice, and it feels very Merlin-esque, very amusing, very fun. And, you feel like you're getting a hug.
Yes. And, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm not trying to create some sort of deity.
Right.
Here, right?
Sure.
I'm not
right.
trying to come up with somebody with, I'm not claiming that the
and
book
who knows
wand
what it
is.
Yeah, who
they
knows
substitute
what it is.
For anything.
Right.
It's just a consciousness that, you know, specifically deals with this idea of traveling between realities and the use of tools. That's what the Book of Wands is about. It's about tools and traveling.
Right.
And how, you know, one does that. Mm-hmm. And if you can, you know, relate to the Book of Wands on that level as a disembodied, you know, or
consciousness
that's not limited to having, you know, to wearing a cloak and having a pointed hat.
Exactly.
That's what the Book of Wands is saying. That's what I am.
Right.
I am a teacher for you personally,
mm-hmm.
and you can communicate directly with me. And you don't, you know, and this is the process that I went through,
mm-hmm.
and the process that other travelers that I would recognize as travelers go through,
mm-hmm.
and my own teachers, and how, you know, this is how, you know, in the book it's DAT Stingo, but in my real life it was a fellow named TD Lingo, who was a brain researcher, and you know, this is how we, you know, related to consciousness, and how I've presented, you know, the Book of Wands.
Exactly, and time is limited here, you know, as far as I don't want to keep you much longer. But wouldn't you say that to work with wands, you have to learn how to awaken that higher functioning of the brain?
Yes, and absolutely.
Yes,
and you know, this would be my personal contribution to this topic. And incidentally, I can stay on as long or as short as you need to do. So I have no time restrictions here.
Oh, good, and I can tell you're multitasking.
Yeah, I'm cleaning my basement.
I could tell, and I think that's fabulous. You know.
And in a way, it kind of frees me up because it lets my, you know, keeps my body happy and busy doing something, and then my mind just goes floating around wherever it wants.
Oh, sure.
So I can actually think better when my hands are busy here.
Right.
However, I did forget the question.
Okay. Well, we were talking about
the risk of multitasking.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I do the same thing too. So, well, you know, wands working in concert with higher functioning.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Okay. So right. So for me, what I came to understand, and of course, you know, I had, you know, the Book of Wands was developed absolutely and directly as a result of my work at the Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory, which was a behavior modification facility run by a fellow named T.D. Lingo.
Right.
And I had met T.D. Lingo in 1982, and I had gone up there to learn, you know, brain self-control. And he ran a program in which people came from all over the world, and in the environment of wilderness, and this was a place that was nearly 300 acres of pristine mountain unspoiled property at 9,500 feet, 40 miles west of Denver in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
No electricity, no running water. When you went to the brain lab, you really were living in, you were really out in the wilderness, and you'd bring your tent or you'd make a lean-to. And so the primary focus of that facility was learning brain and behavior science and practical methods of applying what was then known about brain and behavior science and applying that to one's, you know, applying that very pragmatically to one's daily experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, as the Book of Wands was discovered by yours truly,
right,
I then came to realize how absolutely crucial it was to understand a level of brain function, personal, understand how your brain works.
Right.
And if you didn't really understand at a very fundamental level how your brain worked, you would never get anywhere with wands.
Mm.
And my observations and experience absolutely bear this out to this day, that, you know, and it's said in so many words in the book, you know, you can have a knife. And in the hands of a surgeon, a knife can heal. But in the hands of a criminal, the knife can kill.
Right.
Okay. So how you apply your brain and behavior to a tool makes all the difference in the world. And in fact, unless you, you know, unless you study surgery, unless you study medicine, you're not going to be able to use that tool as a surgeon. Well, in the same way, when you speak of unusual tools and traveling between realities, you know, unless you have the proper brain self-control, unless you understand how your brain works, you're not going to understand any of the subtle tricks, as it were,
right,
the subtle manipulations of wands to make them do what you want them to do. You know, it'd be like giving the keys to a Ferrari to a four-year-old. You know, the four-year-old's gonna, maybe he'll be able to insert the key in the car, but he's only gonna get as far as the next fire hydrant that's sticking up, you know, on the corner. He's gonna
right.
crash it within 50 yards.
Right, right.
But if you are educated and you understand, you know, what this does, what this does about the car, and what, you know, how you do this and so on and so forth, you know, then you can make that car go where you want to go. And in the same way, unless you understand very fundamental things about how your brain works, you know, you're going to be you're going to be just like a lizard sitting on a rock. You know,
right.
you couldn't give a power drill to a reptile and expect him to do anything with it. You need to have an advanced brain to make use of that power drill, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, in the same way, when you're talking about very advanced tools that are going to be able to change your location in the universe or move you from one reality to another, you're going to have to really, you know how the advanced part of your brain works, or you're not going to go anywhere with it.
Sure. Well, how would a person get started? You know, I suggest that, and I've suggested to several of my clients, more than several, probably a dozen, you know, that they pick up the Book of Wands. But you also have a lot of information on your website about the brain and then the Frontal Lobe Supercharge book.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you suggest a person get started to learn about their brain, which I would think would be the first place you need to get started before you even thought about incorporating wands or connecting, you know, with the Book of Wands, or both at the same time? What would you say?
Well, you know, as you know, when you read the Book of Wands, you're really learning a lot about brain in that
Absolutely.
Book.
Absolutely.
And
well, I learned
almost
how to
on every
it.
Page,
yeah.
I've made very certain that it's just, there's no filler in that book.
Right.
And you know, there are parts of the book that are very specific about teaching the reader, you know, some of these brain fundamentals. So you
yes.
can pick up the Book of Wands. And I wrote it in this manner so that the book stands alone.
Right.
In other words, any person could pick up the Book of Wands and boom, you can go from there.
Right.
Now, that's not to say it's the start and end of it. It's
mm-hmm.
it's one slice of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
So certainly you can pick up the book and you will learn a lot of these fundamentals that of brain self-control that are in the book, as well as learn many of the specifics and details about, you know, what wands are and what traveling is.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, then someone could go to my website, and not necessarily, you know, certainly not limited to my website, but I built my, you can go to brainradar.com,
mm-hmm.
which is my, the website that I had begun building in 1996.
Wow.
So I've got 14 years into that website.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of that website is to teach brain self-control.
Right.
So you can combine anything that you, and there, I believe last time I checked, there were 2,000 URLs on that website, which means there's a, you know, there's 2,000 images, articles, music files, pages, so on and so forth. It's a very extensive website.
Mm-hmm.
So combine that with what you're and you know, you could read for a month on that site and read all the free stuff on that site. And that's a very good introduction to brain basics.
Right.
And I meant it to be that way. I the website is meant to be a fun, enjoyable place that you can go and, you know, very easily written, you know, it's not a university neurology textbook.
Right.
It's meant for any person, you know, 8 years old or 80 years old, that they can go and have fun and actually learn in their own language about their brain.
Right.
Okay. So that in conjunction with, you know, this, the whole Book of Wands, you know, do both. Do
right.
one or the other. You know, it's.
Right.
And you can do them both.
Sure.
Do one.
Yeah.
And there's no specific order that you necessarily would have to,
to go with them. Okay.
Go in.
Yeah. And I wanted to share with our listeners, too, that, you know, the Book of Wands is not a textbook, although you'll learn a lot of things. It's a very engaging story. And, you know, I'll have to admit that I'd get to the end of the chapter and realize that you were going to leave me hanging till further chapters along till I learned what happened.
Yes.
And that was very fun. I mean, it was, that's what made the book so fun, because you would be left hanging with a story and then you'd be off on something else.
Yeah.
And so it's a very intriguing, well-written book where you are just absorbed and you literally are there. And, you know, if you have a good imagination, you're visualizing these places that you talk about and these people and these experiences. And so even though it's 738 pages, I could not wait to get to the end. Every night, you know, I had to read some more, and I would stay up late reading because I wanted to know what happened next.
Yes. Well, yeah, I very deliberately, you know, I put it, you know, in a way, that's kind of how life is, though. You know, life does not proceed in these neat and, you know, life is a little messier than it is in the movies and in books.
Right.
Typically, and it jumps around, and you'll get a piece of a puzzle, and then it'll be a little while before you get another piece of the puzzle.
Mm.
And you'll have two things next to each other that may initially not seem that they're related at all, and then later on down the pike you realize, oh my goodness, this had a lot to do with this. And so, you know, I deliberately put the book together in that sense. And I'm speaking of the book that I wrote, mm-hmm. that I hammered out on my keyboard, you know, as being something, of course, very distinct from that idea that we were talking about before, the idea behind the book, right?
Right.
You know, I can only approximate, you know, what that Book of Wands is, and it's a little hard to, I think, explain without someone actually, you know, getting the book in their hands and understanding that it's, you know, it's not something that you can so easily pigeonhole.
Right.
Well,
I'm hoping we've piqued the listeners' interest enough that they'll go on your website, Book of Wands.
Well, no, of course there's a Book of, and it's just so people know, you can go to bookofwands.com.
Yes.
And there are links directly from that website to the Brain website,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. If you go to brainradar.com, then that there are links that take you to the Book of Wands site as well. And one thing I did also want to mention, I think almost probably everyone who looks at the book who is not familiar with my other work will read the book, and it's written in the style of a fictional novel.
Correct.
And, of course, the names that I make up in the book are very humorous. Mm-hmm. The character that I've created to represent my own experience, for example, I call Niles Abercrombie, which is a name that I made up when I was in the sixth grade, when I was doing a play, right? I just made up this name. And all of the characters have funny names, and most of them actually they're named after food. Bobby Spaghetti is one such character. Brianna Pomegranate is another character. What will surprise people is when they discover that every person in this book, not only the person, but the stories that I tell, these are actual people and actual stories and actual experiences that I had. And what we are going to begin doing next week is scanning photographs that I've collected over the past 30 years mm-hmm. from the Brain Lab and from my students. And before very long, you'll be able to go to the Book of Wands website, and you will see a picture of the real Brianna Pomegranate.
Oh,
and you will find a picture of D.A. Stingo's lab, and you'll be able to see all of the things that I'm talking in the book, and then it will suddenly dawn on the reader that this isn't fiction.
It's real.
This guy was right. Wait a minute. I thought, he's talking about his basement, right?
Right.
I'll have a picture of my basement.
That's
the basement that flooded,
yeah.
destroyed the original copy of the Book of Wands.
And the stairs you fell down.
And the stairs that I fell down. And I have pictures. Now, there's a character in there, Dr. Cao,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Who give, now, I, in the book, I describe my experience breaking my back and rupturing my L4 and L5 vertebrae. And I should put the MRIs online.
That would be great.
I mean, there's the pictures.
Uh-huh.
And so most readers, you know, the uninitiated reader will come into the book and think, oh, yeah, this is kind of like Harry Potter, except once they start seeing the pictures and once they get to the Book of Wands website, they're going to say, wait a minute, did that really happen? There really is such a person, and oh, my, he's not making this up.
Right. And there really is.
That's one of the great, you know, payoffs that I will thoroughly enjoy,
right.
especially when I get a reader who, you know, comes into it thinking it's just another
fictional
book.
Yeah. Well, Earthy and Chloe are real.
Excuse me?
Earthy and Chloe are real.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. Yeah. So
they were my favorite two characters.
Oh, well, me too, you know.
You know.
And very interestingly, I sort of don't want to give this away. And I'm not going to give it away. There's something about the book. And I'll just leave this to
imagination.
Not to the imagination, but there's something about the Book of Wands that you would not suspect about the book.
Uh-huh.
And it is finally revealed. You know, I think you know what I'm talking about. The very last page of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the real great surprises of the book itself.
Oh, absolutely.
And I finished the book 2 days after I finished the book. Now, I had done George Norrie's Coast to Coast show for 13 years.
Right.
Actually, I had done it for about 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years ago, I stopped doing the show. I think really it was a matter that we had pretty much, for 12 years or 11 years, I had fit everything I could think of mm-hmm. about the brain. And I think it was getting to the point where I was kind of repeating myself. And
right.
They wanted to keep doing some new stuff.
Right.
And I had also told them that I was working on the new book as well. Well, very interestingly, and I hadn't contacted them. I hadn't talked to them in a very long time, and I hadn't been on the show in 2 years. I finished the book 2 days later, and I'm thinking, okay, I got to get on George Norrie. I got to let these guys know that my book is done here because I want to start, you know, getting the book out for people and so on and so forth. Without calling them, 2 days after I finished typing the last word in the book, I get a call from the producer.
Wow.
He says, Neil, we got a spot. How would you like to come on the show? And I says, gee, that's amazing. I just finished my book 2 days ago. And so, you know, and they didn't even know it. They had no clue.
That's
they
amazing.
Just called me up out of the blue, as it were. But yet, you know, the book was proving itself to do what the book is all about. And, you know, I was thrust into another reality in that instant when they called me up, and things have not been the same.
Right.
Now, if that wasn't enough, I did the show, and I have an 800 number that people can call up and order the book if they like. And it took me a month to get through all the phone calls. It literally took me a month to go through and review all the phone calls. Turns out, the day after I did the show, I got a call from a guy named Harvey Rockman, and he's a movie producer.
Wow.
And he's just working, they're doing a movie with Robert De Niro and Faye Dunaway right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to me, well, have you signed a movie deal for your book yet? And I said, no. He says, well, send me the book. So we're working on Harvey is very, very interested in in producing the movie, and we're producing the screenplay right now. So,
that's perfect.
So I would anticipate, you know, and I don't want to hex myself, but I'm fairly confident that the Book of Wands will hit your local theater within the next couple of years.
Well, I sure hope so, because it's just fabulous, and I certainly learned a lot of things that I've applied to my own life. And, you know, and it's now I have I call it the idea fairy hitting all the time. Learning how to click my amygdalas forward has just been fabulous, and sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night with just these ideas going, you know.
Now you're talking about clicking your amygdala. So were you unfamiliar with this whole idea of clicking the amygdala until you read the Book of Wands?
Correct. Now, I think I have been doing that, but unconsciously.
Yes.
Only because of my experiences, my mystical experiences and visions and connections with the other realms, but I had no idea that I could do it purposely.
Yes, and this was something that I've worked on, you know, for the past 20 years, and this was Lingo's, you know, life's work. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, I mean, there are many, many very effective people out there who do exactly what you say. They use the more advanced portions of their brain.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to you know, utilize the frontal lobes processes and the advanced processes that reside in their brain. And there are ways, and there are a lot of different ways of teaching this. Lingo, my brain teacher, it was his life's work to figure out a method of communicating this very fundamental, you know, of identifying and communicating and teaching this very fundamental thing, which is how you use the, you know, how, well, the way he put it is how you turn on the other 90% of your brain.
Correct.
You know, there is the folk saying that we only use 10% of our brain, and although that's not literally true, we probably use, I mean, it's not, we probably, our brains have an infinite capacity and infinite potential. So you can't 10% is far too generous. How can you calculate a percentage of infinity?
Right.
You can't. You never even approach. You will never approach your potential because your potential is infinite. But what Lingo's work was to find a very simple, easy way to communicate to people the concept that you can tap into this potential predictably, reliably, and easily,
mm-hmm.
with just a few key concepts and understanding of, you know, how your brain is put together. And I think he was extremely gifted and in that way, in that he developed, a language and a system by which he could teach people how to click on that other 90% of your brain. And I worked with him for 11 years, and then when he died in 93, I continued that same work that I was doing with him. And, I like to think that I've been able to make some new discoveries in terms of helping to communicate that, you know, that kind of information, you know, beyond even what he was able to do.
Good, yeah.
And the Book of Wands is one vehicle by which, you know, I continue that work, as well as introduce, new concepts and ideas that did not even exist when Lingo was alive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, I'm hopeful and the feedback that I'm getting from readers is that we've gone in a whole exciting, we've opened up in a whole exciting new area and opened up new doors with, introducing these concepts of travel and unusual tools.
Right, and that's exactly how I've found it to be in my own personal life, and wanting to share it, you know, your message with others, and that's why I wanted to do this interview.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, well, this has been very fantastic, and I've learned some things tonight that have helped me kind of put puzzle pieces together, and I really appreciate that, and I'm hoping that those that listen in will go out and buy your book and start working with their own brain and finding out how the Book of Wands wants to work with them. And I will be putting this in a MP3 file that I will email to you so you can download it and put a link on your website if you like.
Or I will do that.
And use it in any way that you want. So we appreciate your time, and we hope you got some good work done on your basement.
Well, I did, as a matter of fact. I can now walk through my basement.
Woohoo!
This is so funny because we it's in the book. It's a messy basement. It's in the book.
Oh, well, that's
good. Some things never change.
That's true. Well, lots of love to you, Neil, and we'll look forward to seeing the movie, and we'll keep you posted on how things go as far as on this end, and we'll love to hear more of your stories.
All right. Well, it was a delightful conversation. I hope we get to talk again another time down the road.
Okay. Thanks so much, and love to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.